Well, we enjoyed the feast in Victoria, British Columbia this year, and there were 400 people registered to attend there. And sometime during the week that we were there, a fairly virulent flu broke out in the local school system, and they brought it home to their parents, who brought it home to us at the hotels. And by the end of the feast, we were decimated by about 50%. And as Mr. Dick looked out over the crowd, which looked a little bit like this, kind of thinly and sparsely placed, he says, "Well, I see I'm speaking to the remnant of the house of Israel." So, hey, I got to use that one too. It rained daily there, and we loved it. It was fantastic. There was one day where this strange orange ball popped out in the sky, and it nearly blinded me. I didn't have any idea how to deal with it, because, you know, I've never seen anything quite like it. It was amazing after a week of clouds and rain almost all the time. But the most amazing thing I think that occurred was, as we were flying into Victoria, we had one of those elevator drops in the plane that, you know, everybody loves so much. And the pilot came on and said, "Hey, really sorry, there's this really horrible storm coming in. In fact, they're calling it Stormageddon. And it's supposed to basically wipe Victoria off the island, and we really hope everybody survives. It's going to be a terrible, you know, 500-year storm." Ha! He had no idea what he was talking about. Apparently the news agencies, you know, were in the, you know, how they are wont to do at the bottom of the street. It said, you know, "Storm Watch 2016, you know, dun, 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 dun." Now we go out to our in-the-field people, and they go out there, and they're standing there, go, "Yeah, we don't really see a whole lot. There's some couple branches down, but there's none of this 100 kph winds they were talking about." That's about 65 miles an hour, if you don't know. And so, well, God was placing his name there, and that's what happens when we go to the feast and we're honoring him with our presence. He takes care of us, and he takes care of the area where we're going to. And he did bring a blessing there. I also appreciate the opportunity to be here in front of you today because the Elliott sent their greetings, and now I don't have to go around to each and every one of you individually. Well, while we were there, and I really appreciated Mr. Miller's message, his sermonette, I really appreciated it because while we were at the feast, we heard a lot of great messages. And knowing that I had a sermon to give when I came back, I was excited to find out that there was some really, really interesting information from a particular gentleman from Australia named Mark Robertson, that he shared with us that was very compelling to me, and it really spoke to me. And here's this guy from Australia that I've never met before, it was almost like he was in my mind, and he was sharing his point of view on, and his perspective, I should say. So I'll tell you that he provided the map for this trip that we're going to take together today, but I'm doing the driving, so just so you know. Yeah. And don't worry, this is only half of the references we have today. So get your pens ready. There's a lot of information. All right, we're going to do a little word association. I've done this before, and I think it works pretty well. I'm going to say a word. Clear your minds. Priest. What went through your mind? You don't have to shout it out. No hands raised or anything. But what comes to mind when you think of priests? Well, I'll be honest with you. In the church, 31 years, read the Bible a couple of times at least in that time, read a lot in the Old Testament, looking at the priestly duties, and all I can think of is sacrifices, bloody, messy, smelly, ugh. Kind of a rough job, you know. Some weird garments, you know, you have to wear special clothes. There's a lot of smoke. There's a lot of incense. It's just a lot of hard work. And I go, priest, really? You know, in Old Testament times, other cultures and religions had priests too. You had Marduk and Dagon and Baal and Ishtar and Tammuz and a few of the others, and they all did really weird, strange things, and some of them were really nasty, terrible things, and we won't go into that, but you have this picture. They've used the word, and they use the word priests for their people too, so it just sort of builds this image of what priest is. What is it? In modern times, many religions have what they call priests as well. They have their strange garments and strange rituals and smoke and incense and various, you know, they have their altars. And so it can be hard to kind of sort out what does it mean to be a priest. Well, there are priests of the true God listed in the Bible. Again, mentioned that already. And like I said, they did some hard things that are hard to relate to for us in this age. We look back at the practices that they were involved in, it might be a little difficult to really get an understanding and a picture of what was that all about. You know, they wore special garments and there were all these various rituals, and to my, you know, kind of modern mind, I gotta tell you, this isn't that greatly appealing. It just seems kind of bizarre, and I go, I don't know if I want to do that cut and throats thing. It just doesn't look too much fun. It's just a little too weird, and if somebody asked me if I wanted to be a priest, I'd probably have to say, gonna have to think hard about this. Well, let's just shift gears a little bit. What are we gonna be doing for the millennium? What's our job? Have we thought about it? You know, the Bible gives a job title for the first fruits, for those of us in the... Let's turn over to Revelation 20. It's the one in the back of the book, Steve. Revelation 20, and we'll read verse 6, where it says, "Blessed and holy is he that has part in the first resurrection," and that's the resurrection you and I are looking forward to. "On such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Okay, so we have a job description, and I admit I'm going to have to adjust my mindset on what it means to be a priest, because that's a great honor to be called to by God. To be called to the priesthood is something that's very, very, very high honor, and we need to understand it. It's not something offered to just everybody and just anybody. It says there, "Blessed he is he who has part in the first resurrection, on such the second death, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ." So it's a first resurrection gift, a gift of priesthood. And it's not, again, not offered. Not just anybody, but a relative young group of people. Well, now, you know, some of the young people in the room are young at heart. I think we have more young at hearts here than young people, but I see a few younger faces. Does that sound terribly appealing to be a priest? You know, the blood, you know, the mess. You might be thinking, can I do something else, please? Can I be a teacher? How about a manager? How about a musician or a lawyer or a doctor or something like that? That sounds a whole lot more interesting to me. Priest? Not so much. Well, we all realize that over time, words can take on different meanings. And we, at the beginning, I discussed a little bit about the various concepts that we have of priests that have come down through the ages, and new meanings or new understanding or concepts that get applied or overlaid onto words can really change what they mean for us. And that's particularly true of this word priest. The role, the concept, even the word itself has been abused by other cultures, other religions over the ages, and it's really clouded the understanding that we might have of what it means to be a priest. God has given us patterns, though, in his word that we can learn from. Hebrews, for example, tells us, if you want to turn to Hebrews 8, we'll be going there in a moment. Hebrews tells us that the formal Levitical priesthood was set up as a type of future things. Now, the Levitical priesthood was meant and intended to be temporary, but it was real in the sense that it was representative of the real eternal priesthood of Christ, the priesthood of Melchizedek. Turn to Hebrews 8, and we will start reading in verse 1 of Hebrews 8. "Now of these things which we have spoken," this is the sum, "we have such a high priest who is set on the right hand of the throne of the majesty of the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched and not man. For every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices. Therefore it is of necessity that this man have something also to offer. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law." And that speaks of the Levitical priesthood. Okay. Verse 5, "who serve," speaking again of the Levitical priesthood, "who serve under the example and shadow of heavenly things." That's why Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle. "For see," says he, "that you make all things according to the pattern showed you in the mountain." What this is telling us is that the Levitical priesthood was a pattern of something else in the future. And you see that? The temple, the Levitical priesthood, was a shadow of the permanent and eternal that is to come. Moses was again told to be very careful, be very particular, to follow that pattern very closely, exactly, in fact, when he set up the temple and he set up the Levitical priesthood. Those patterns are there to teach us what God has in mind for mankind and for us. The sacrifices, the tabernacle, the Holy of Holies, even the ornaments, brethren, had significance. And many, unfortunately, as they read about the description of the tabernacle and the various duties of the Levitical priesthood, it gets overlooked as old, ancient, uninteresting, and kind of difficult to understand. We really don't know what that's all about. But it is there for our teaching, and that's what it's all about. In the Old Testament, we all understand that Aaron, the high priest, was representative of the eternal high priest, Jesus Christ. And we know that, don't we? That's nothing new. That's no big challenge for any of us. That's something we've talked about. But what about the parallels that exist with the rest of the Levitical priesthood, with the rest of the Levites, who acted in support of the high priest? Who are they a type of? Who or what is a fulfillment of their service, of what they were set apart for? Well, I submit that it's us. The first fruits, the elect, the chosen of God, the firstborn. And I believe that can be proved if we turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. We'll begin to grow an understanding of their role and how it applies to our role and our place in the kingdom of God. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. It's talking about us, talking about the chosen of God, those who have been called out of this world to live different lives, lives of meaning and magnitude that most people can't even understand or comprehend. So let's take a closer look then at the Levitical priesthood and see how it applies to us, applies to our future. Let's turn over to Numbers now in chapter 3. Numbers chapter 3. It's an orange tab. I even color coordinated them so I could find them easier. Numbers chapter 3, verse 6 through 13 in particular, but we really want to take the closest look at verse 12. And in fact, I'll just leave those other verses for you to read. But it's where God set apart the Levites in place of the firstborn of all of the children of Israel. Do you recall that when they were coming out of, before they were released, he killed all the firstborn. And when God did that, he set apart firstborn as special to himself, so that everyone in the nation of Israel who was a firstborn was set apart for God. He decided to take the Levites in place of all the firstborn people. And there was a fairly complicated census done, and they worked through that, and they set apart the Levites, though, for the service in the temple. And as it says in verse 12, "And behold, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of all the firstborn that opened the matrix among the children of Israel. Therefore the Levites shall be mine." You see that he sanctified them, he set them apart, he made them holy. Sound familiar? That pattern can be applied in this room to us as well. God took the Levites instead of the firstborn of Israel, and they were to be representative of the firstborn of all of Israel. And as such, they were very special to God. They were very special to the Israelites themselves. They were a set-apart people. Now, the Bible, when talking of these representatives, often uses priests and Levite in the same breath, if you will. I put that in quotes. In the same breath, and we can find several example of this in 1 Chronicles, if you want to turn there. 1 Chronicles chapter 23 to start with. And verse 2, where it says, "And he gathered together all the princes of Israel with the priests and the Levites." See there, he kind of puts them all in one breath, kind of a combo unit there. And we'll also find something similar in 24:6, 1 Chronicles 24:6, where it says, in verse 6, I'll just cut to the chase, where it says, "Wrote before the kings, the princes, before the chief of the fathers of the priests of the Levites, of the priests and the Levites. So you see right there about three-quarters of the way through the verse where the priests and Levites are mentioned in one, as one common thought and effect. And finally in verse 31, same chapter, we see that happen again. The chief of the fathers of the priests and Levites, he was bringing them together. They were casting lots over them to determine their place in the structure or the roster of the priests. We clearly understand that the high priest was to be of Aaron's lineage only. We've seen that clearly, and again, we understand, but the Levites themselves also perform priestly duties. And again, generally in support of the high priest, they cared for the tabernacle and later the temple grounds. They kept things tidy, clean, you know. They packed it up when it was time to move. They put it up when they parked, if you will. And they also were involved in the sacrifices and preparing them and getting things ready. And they had a very special status in Israel. I hope you're beginning to see some of the parallels and consider those parallels and how they can apply to us. Now in the New Testament, in Hebrews, let's turn over to Hebrews. Hebrews 12, verse 23, and where it says, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, and that's in reference to us, and I think it helps to cement the, and drive home that concept that the Levites were representative of the firstborn of Israel, and we as the firstborn are representative of the rest of the world in a way, in the way that we're coming out of it and we're set apart, and we have a special role to fulfill. Being a first fruit brethren is very special. Do we fully grasp that? Do we fully understand the magnitude of what is being offered to us? So I think we can clearly see now, though, that the Levitical priesthood is a shadow of the first fruit's role in the kingdom of God, the role that you and I will have. So I'd like to take a closer look at what the Levitical priesthood did. What did they really do? What's recorded in the Bible? And it might help to clarify and expand our understanding of what it means to be a priest, and perhaps clear some of the negativity that's been overlaid on that job description, if you will. Well, first and obvious role, of course, is temple service. If we turn real quick head over to Numbers 18 for me, where God tells them that, I give you the priesthood to you as a gift of service, a gift for service. And that's Numbers 18, and we'll read verses 6 and 7. Numbers 18, verse 6 and 7. And behold, I have taken your brethren the Levites from among the children of Israel. To you they are given as a gift for the Lord to do the service of the tabernacle of the congregation. Therefore you and your sons with you will keep your priest's office for everything of the altar and within the veil, and you shall serve. I have given your priest's office unto you as a service of gift, and the stranger that comes nigh shall be put to death. It was a very important role. He was speaking to Aaron, you know, you're the high priest, I want you to focus in this area. The Levites will do everything else, and that's their job. I've given you them to take care of all those things. So when they were serving in the temple, the Levitical priests were really an interface, if you will, between God and man. The average Israelite, non-Levite, was not allowed into the inner court of the temple at all. Only the high priest could go into the Holy of Holies, and only the Levitical priesthood itself could be in and around the temple in the other areas. The average Israelite could only come into the outer court area, could never go any farther. There was this a line drawn, and you can't, here you will not pass. So they were in a very, very special role with the Israelites. They were a communication, a way of communicating with God, if you will, at that time. And it was their job to maintain the tabernacle, to keep it clean, to look around and see, are the floors clean? You know, is everything where it belongs? You know, if we dusted, this is God's house. We need to take very good care of it and be very appropriate with it at all the time. When people are coming in, are they messing around or fooling around? Well, we need to throw them out. This is a very important and special role, a very important special place. And the Levites, needed to be sure that those who were coming in were approaching with the proper amount of decorum. And again, we note that they managed the sacrifices. Let's keep in mind that during this time, sacrificing of animals was not unusual. We didn't have the slaughterhouses we have now where it all happens behind the walls and we never know anything about it and you just get your cow at the store already prepackaged and ready for your meal. It was a very real business to manage animals, to take care of them, and then to prepare them for eating. Now, did the Levites stay in the temple all the time? Were they always there? Well, no. I don't have the reference, unfortunately. I wasn't able to locate it. I was trying this morning to find it, but the Levites were only involved in the heavy work, the heavy hauling, if you will, between the ages of 30 and 50, about a 20-year period in their life when they were called to do the heavy work, if you will. So under that system, I'd be retired from that and involved in other things. So you young guys better get it going. Come on now. I have to move that wall again. It's going to kill me. So 30 to 50 years, and then you were in a more supporting role within the temple itself, more of a mentoring role. Now, they also served on a rotating schedule, about 2 weeks at a time, and essentially, if I'm not mistaken, once a year. I believe it was once a year. No, there were 26. It would be twice a year. They would serve a two-week period of time, and then they were out in their communities as a Levitical priesthood, living and walking among those who they lived and walked among. You know, they spent most of their time doing other duties within the community. You know, just take for a moment, let's just think, what an awesome thing the future is going to be when we're right at the very seat of power of the universe in Jerusalem. When you're walking in the streets of Jerusalem and you're talking with Jesus Christ and you're sharing the things going on in your community and you're getting advice and then you're able to go out and implement that in the community where you work. What is that going to look like? What are the things that a priest does when they're not serving in the temple a relatively small period of time every year? Anybody in here interested in the law? Interested in lawyering or judging? Well, that was one of the roles of the Levitical priesthood, was being a judge. They served in their community as judges, as almost a kind of a supreme court, if you will. And God backed them up. He was really clear about this. If you turn over to Deuteronomy 17, Deuteronomy 17, when the priest spoke, when he heard the case and when they decided the decision was made, it was implemented. And God expected that whatever they said would be done. And so Deuteronomy 17, 8 through 13. If there arises a matter too hard for you in the judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, between stroke and stroke, being matters of controversy within your gates, then you'll arise and go you up to the place which the Lord your God shall choose. And you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and unto the judge, and who shall be in those days, and inquire, and they shall show you the sentence of judgment. And you'll do according to the sentence which the Lord shall choose, shall show you. And you will observe to do according to all that they inform you, all that they teach you, all that they instruct you. So not only will they listen to what the problem is, but then they'll tell you how to fix it and how to do it, and you're to do what they say. That's what God was telling them. They also determined the punishments for murder and other civil matters. And all of this, we'll get you to, if you want to see that, turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 21. And just right there in verses 1 to 5, I'll just paraphrase. But whenever a body was found lying outside of a city and they didn't know who had killed the person, there was blood guiltiness on Israel. And the Levitical priesthood would actually go out and measure the distances to the different cities, and whoever was closest got the blood guilt. And then certain sacrifices had to be made in order to avert the blood guiltness from that city, to put away the sin of the murder in that sense. So, and it was a very heavy responsibility that was placed upon the priesthood to do this, these things. This is all very relevant to our future. Turn over to 1 Corinthians, and we'll see what Paul said about this. 1 Corinthians 6. Speaking of judging, he says, do you not know that, and this is verse 2, do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? And if the world shall be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Know you not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? Well, brother, we need to be able to develop our judgment and understanding based on God's word. We need to study. It should really highlight the importance of studying and knowing the word of God, of knowing the law of God and understanding how it's applied and should be applied in every circumstance. So that's a pretty important role, a judge. That sound kind of interesting to anybody? Well, hang in there. How about teacher? Anybody in the room like teaching? We've already touched on this a little bit. When there was a controversy and a judgment was made, people had to be taught how to implement what needed to be implemented. The priesthood, the Levitical priesthood, also taught the commandments. They were responsible for teaching statutes and judgments of God as found in the scrolls. They would have been intimate with the history of Israel. Well, they were constantly reminding God in prayer about all the wonderful things he did, and it was all about the history. He brought us out of Egypt. He did all these things. They had to inform the people. They had to stay aware of the times. They had to educate on concepts of sin and forgiveness and on how to worship God. They would have been counselors and advisors in their community. We'll turn over to Malachi 2 verse 7. Malachi 2 and verse 7. And see what God says that is, should be important to the priests. For the priest's lips should keep knowledge, true knowledge, and they should seek the law at his mouth. People should come to the priest knowing that they can hear truth, that they can hear the true law of God expounded. Knowing because, and why? Because he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. So it's a very special and important role that the priest held as a teacher, as a source of knowledge and understanding. It wasn't common in that time for a scroll. If you had this Bible in a scroll form, it'd be pretty big. You probably couldn't find a wagon big enough to haul it around. But so the common person may not have the law of God in their laps like you and I do, which is quite a blessing to have instant access, if you will, to the mind of God. We can just open the book pages and read and have opportunity to understand through the Holy Spirit. So they taught the people the law and how to live it and how to love it. They taught them how to understand holy and unholy. What did that mean? So judge and teacher, two very interesting ideas. How about leaders? Well, that's another thing that priests were. They had a major leadership role in their communities. They were already looked up to, but this wasn't just some cushy desk job where they sat behind, closed doors all day long and had high-level conversations and were just, kind of inaccessible except when you had an appointment. No, these guys were right out there in the middle of things. Let's consider, you might even call it was kind of a frontline action-oriented role. Frontline action-oriented. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy in chapter 20, and we'll read verses 1 through 4. One of the roles of the priest was during time of war was to embolden the troops, talk to them. And it says right here, verse 20, when you go out to battle against your enemies and you see the horses and the chariots and people more than you, do not be afraid of them, for the Lord your God is with you, which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be when you come nigh unto battle, right before it happens, that the priest shall approach. It means he comes right up to the front lines. And speak to the people, and shall say to them, Hear, O Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint. Fear not, and do not tremble, neither be you terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he that goes with you to fight for you against your enemies and to save you. They were right up in front. I mean, the battle was about to be joined, and they were right there with the soldiers. They had to be very brave. One of their roles was to trumpeting. You find this in Numbers 10, verse 8 and 9. Blowing the trumpets of warfare and, you know, calling the advance or calling the fallback or whatever. They had to be out there in the midst to pass on the messages with the trumpets and the appropriate sounds at the appropriate time. Numbers 10, verse 8 and 9. And the sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow with the trumpets, and they shall be to you for an ordinance forever throughout your generations. And if you go to war in your land against the enemy that oppresses you, then you shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and you'll be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. It's a very important role to blow that trumpet. It's kind of, hey, God, we got a problem here. You know, the priests are blowing the trumpets, and God's going, oh, I better check. You know, I'm going to have to, I knew about this, but they're doing what I asked them to do, so I'm going to go take care of this for them. They had a very important role to be with the people. They would have had to be very, very brave. Imagine walking out into a battlefield as a priest and bravely standing up and saying, God's got this. Hang in there, guys. Push forward. Keep going, you know. Let's remember that who led the people across the Jordan River? Who were the first ones to go? It was the priests carrying the ark. Who led the people around Jericho? Can you imagine that? All these guys in funny garments walking around out in front of the crowd, blowing the trumpets. I'm sure the Jerokians or whatever they were called were going, really? That's all you got? Well, they probably were some pretty bulky guys, and, you know, carrying all that stuff for the tabernacle would have had to build some muscle. So they're probably some pretty hardy and hale guys, and I don't think I'd want to get too tangled up with them on the wrong side of the coin. They would have been really tough guys. They were involved. They led by example. They were out there in the midst of things. Here's how you do it, guys. Sound familiar? This is the way. Walk you in it. Something along those lines. You know, you remember when Moses came down from the mountain after all that time and he found the golden calf? Who was it that strapped on swords and went amongst the people and sorted out that problem? What was the Levites? These were tough guys. They weren't to be trifled with. How about Phinehas? Anybody remember him? Sure, he was one of Aaron's, but he was also a Levite. He wasn't to be messed with. He didn't even ask permission. He just went and took care of the problem. He said, this is wrong, and needs to be stopped, and he took care of it. How about the priests who defended little King Joash? Who were those? Well, they were Levites. They strapped on their swords. The high priest said, put on your swords and stand around him and defend him. Anybody comes into the temple or tries to, take them out. That's it. And they took his grandmother out and sorted her out too. Well, how about the gatekeepers during Nehemiah's time? He said, don't let anybody in the door. Shut the door right before sundown. Don't open them until after sundown tomorrow. You don't let anybody come in. Don't pay any attention to them. If they try, stop them. These were tough guys. Being a priest, being a warrior, being a leader. You know, that's an executive action role, if you will. Just, you know, attach to the top and getting your directions from the high priest and doing the job. On the ground, boots on the ground, as it were, among the people. An executive action role in the midst, motivating, guiding, and problem solving right at the edge of it, right where it's happening. You know, let's understand that our future role is not an analogy. It's not an analogy, but it's actually a true fulfillment of the Levitical type. It's an action job. It's being with the people, being in temple service, taking care of the temple in our times, being judges, being teachers, motivators, and leaders in the people. That sound like a really great job description to you? Multifaceted role, quite a resume, huh? Sound good? Mr. Robertson's an Australian, and so every once in a while I start to sound a little Australian. It's because I can hear him in my head. But wait, there's more. It sounded better when he said it. That's that Australian thing. How about doctors? Anybody in the room like to be a doctor or interested in the health field, health profession? Well, priests acted in the role of doctors and health inspectors. There was some ceremonial aspects to it, of course, but there was also some practical application. They were involved in quarantining, a remarkable new thing that we are doing now in the medical profession, or in the last few, 100 years or so, is something that the Levitical priesthood knew about thousands of years ago, because God told them about quarantining. If you're sick, don't come. Stay in your house. That's quarantining. It's as simple as that. And they were involved in laying and lifting quarantines on various areas for whatever reason. They also inspected buildings for health-related issues. I don't have all the references for you. I have a number of them coming up in a few minutes, but in this particular area, you could probably look through Leviticus 13 and Leviticus 14. Go ahead and spend some time on your own. Read about that and see all the various things that the priesthood was involved in terms of doctoring and being the health inspectors of their time. They would also have been involved in circumcision, so that's a bit of a really important little, non-elective surgery, and at least half the people in the room kind of winced a little bit. It's really important to do it right, I promise you. Inspection of skin ailments to diagnose them. They would look at them, and based on how God described what to look for, they would decide if somebody had leprosy or not, or some kind of skin ailment, and then they would implement the quarantines. This role was fully supported by Jesus Christ. Do you remember the times that he healed lepers and various others and said, go to the priest and have them check you out, get the all clear, so you can go back home and so you can come back into the city? Give the appropriate sacrifice, go to the priest. He backed it up. So does that sound interesting? Healing the nations physically, mentally, spiritually. The resume is growing, isn't it? Priest sounds pretty interesting. It's really coming together now. Well, how about finance? Anybody in here like banking? I don't know if I like banking. I might like it more if I owned a bank or if I was involved in it a little more closely. And how, inventory control. Anybody know what inventory control is? All the stuff comes in. You got to know where it is and how to find it. If you just put it in a big heap, it takes forever to sort through it. You got to store it properly. You got to know what it is and where it is. I'm going to go through a 7 or 8 reference list here, and I'll let you write them down. We won't go to all of them or maybe even any of them for this part, but for finance and inventory control, and believe me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more information. 2 Chronicles 31, verse 14, where we find the priests managing the offerings and dispersing the funds. Nehemiah 13, verse 13. Priests are appointed as treasurers. 1 Chronicles 9, verse 26. They looked after and accounted for the national treasures of Israel. That's a really important role. They had to be trustworthy. 1 Chronicles 26:26. The donations that were coming in for the temple that David called for were entrusted to the priests. A lot of money, a lot of stuff. It was up to them to keep track of it. 2 Chronicles 8, verse 15. Solomon has the priests manage the treasury. Big bucks. There's a lot of opportunity to walk out with your pockets full if you had pockets. These guys had to be trustworthy. Hezekiah in 2 Chronicles 24:5 also had the priests over the treasury. And Josiah in 2 Chronicles 31. Verse 2 and 12 specifically. In short, whenever someone trustworthy and responsible was needed, who got the job? Priests. The priest did. Does it seem kind of important that we be faithful stewards with our money? It says if we can't be trusted with little things, how can we be trusted with big things? It's very important. Okay, well, we move on. We've got doctors and finance, and we've got, teachers and motivators, leaders, and it just keeps going. It's kind of awesome. Priests had a lot of really great responsibilities and opportunities. Anybody here a musician? I know one. She lives at my house. Plays the piano beautifully. Yeah, we got a lot of musicians, I'm sure, that you enjoy playing music. It's an important part of your life. And music is really important to God, too. How'd you like to specialize as a priest in music? You can do it. You know, God really loves music. And in fact, it was so important to God. Musicians were so important in the priesthood. They were actually exempted from other duties. So if you didn't want to take care of sacrifices, just pick up the harp. Learn how to play it. All right. Sorry, Bob. That's your job. 1 Chronicles 9, verse 33. Let's read that. I ran out of tabs. Well, I'm not done yet. 1 Chronicles 9, verse 23. Let's read how God exempted them. Verse 33. And these are the singers, chief of the fathers of the Levites, who remained in the chambers, were free, for they had been employed in that work day and night. And when it says were free, they were free from other responsibilities. They didn't have to do anything but play music, sing and be in choral groups and, you know, sing praises to God. It's how important it was to God that those, that music was a part of the temple service and constantly available day and night. So, they also had a number of other roles, which I'll just sort of list. Whenever God commanded it, they asked for a census. Whenever he commanded a census, well, the priests carried it out. They were the ones that went out and counted people. They would have been involved in blessing marriages. They would have been involved in blessing new ventures. They would have been point men for problem solving. You know, people in the community have challenges and issues. Hey, how do we do this thing? Well, let's go ask the priest. Those guys got, you know, they're connected with God. And how about major event organizing? Major event organizing. That sound like a lot of fun? Well, hey, feasts have got to happen. You know, I was in Victoria with 400 people, and Mr. Elliott, I don't know if that man slept. Can you imagine doing it for a city or a whole region, having a massive feast for tens of thousands or 20,000s or 50,000 or 100,000 people, and being the point person and responsible for the whole thing, or even just a part of it, could take a lot of energy and a lot of capability. And there's all kinds of opportunities where we can learn and grow and develop skills that will come to play in this time when we become the priests of God. Okay, so we've considered a lot of the aspects, a lot of the varied aspects, and it's quite a job description, isn't it, for a priest? Is it kind of clear up that smoky, incensey, bloody mess that priest usually has been in our mind? Well, it has for me. It got me excited sitting there listening to this gentleman tell us about this and to consider what the Bible records about the priesthood and what that means for all of us. Well, we need to understand that somebody in this position, this highly influential position, this high-level position, would also need to live to very high standards, wouldn't they? It would be expected, wouldn't you think? I mean, I'm looking at this person, and they're managing the treasury of the nation. Do I trust them? Well, I better. Are they trustworthy? I sure hope so. It's something we need to consider, that we're being called to a position of high authority. It's a reflection of God, and it requires high standards. He requires high standards of us. This is very typical of the firstborn, the one who carries the family name. Now, whether we're all firstborn in this room, we want to be firstborn in the family of God. And so we need to carry ourselves as firstborn of the family of God. Ones who carry the name of God, the ones who carry the kingdom within and live to very high standards. These people were required to act with the highest of integrity and impartiality in whatever setting they came into. They had to judge. They were required to judge with fairness and with righteousness. While they were serving in the temple, they were held to incredibly high standards. There was special clothing that they had to wear, and they were to wear it because they weren't to perspire while they were working. God didn't want them getting overheated and becoming a big drippy mess. He wanted them to act with dignity and with authority and carry out the commands for the sacrifices that he wanted them to do. That required special clothes and a special mindset, even. They had to be clean. They had to bathe regularly and stay clean. You can find that in Ezekiel 44. Ezekiel 44, looking at the high standards for dress and personal hygiene for the priesthood. In Leviticus 10, chapter 10, verse 9, Levites, when they were involved in their job duties and their job description, were not allowed to drink alcohol, particularly in the temple. Can you imagine being a little tipsy, working at the temple, and somebody walks in with something that isn't holy, and you just sort of laugh it off? Not a good idea, because someone who hasn't been drinking is going to come down on you, and you're going to lose your job. And if it's God, you might lose your life. So letting that alcohol get the best of you while you're on the job couldn't be allowed to the Levitical priesthood. They had to be very careful with their interactions with the world around them because they were holy, sanctified, and set apart. Sound like anybody else within the room? Well, I hope it's everybody, because we all are. God has set us all apart. He's sanctified us. He calls us holy. And he has a special role for all of us. Leviticus 21, verse 16, the priesthood, a person serving in the priesthood could not have physical defects. Now, this was not to pick on people. Let us remember that this was a shadow of heavenly things, and as such had to represent the highest and the best. In God's kingdom, when Christ returns, physical ailments like those things won't exist. They won't have to, because people can be healed and can be restored. And as changed sons of God, there won't be any of those issues with those who are there serving with God in his temple. It's about being a shadow of things to come. Brethren, this should really motivate us. It should be a real powerful motivator for us to recognize the incredible role that we've been called to as priests. We've been offered a high-level role in the kingdom of God. Not just a taxi driver or a street sweeper or a janitor, all things very important in the physical realm for sure, but a high-level position, working face-to-face with God. Face-to-face with God, wow! That's a charge of our imagination. What an incredible honor to actually be able to come and go as you please in God's presence. If you look at some of the histories of the kings of the world, if you entered, well, in Esther, we have a record of that. If you actually entered into the throne room without being announced or being called for, you could be killed. Didn't even matter why. Didn't even matter who you were. You could be killed. In that sense, being able to walk in before God and come and go as we please as a high-level representative of his government, that's a really important role, and it should just amaze us. It won't go to people who have flaws in their character, who are hanging on to who they are, or holding on to their pride or desiring their way over God's way. It just won't happen. We should take note of those high standards that were required of the priests and sharpen up, apply them to ourselves. We can't allow ourselves to be like everybody else, to be the same as everybody else, to fit in. You know, you want to find out what happens to priests who go astray? Read Malachi. Malachi. These things should motivate us, brethren, to strive for perfection. And no, I'm not saying we can do it ourselves. We know that. You know that. I know that. It's not something we can do by ourselves. We have to have God's grace. God is really the one that ultimately overcomes. He's the one that will get the glory. But we must do our parts. We can be clean and pure in God's sight if we're humble, if we're repentant, if we're changing. Okay, so as we wrap this up, do you still think of the role of a priest as boring or undesirable? I know I don't. The role is so diversified, so challenging, so broad that it's really hard to find a modern equivalent or a modern comparison. It has various things. It's very interesting. It's very involved in every level. You're at all levels in society and government, moving interchangeably between, you know, the throne of God and in the community with people with various challenges that need your help. You're at all levels. You're a kind of a warrior, a teacher, judge and a leader, just this huge, this big mantle. You're involved in these major planning of events. You know, feast times are coming. You're mixing with people in a hands-on way, one-on-one, and you're commanding the respect of the people around you, of the nation where you serve. The best job description that is out there today in this modern world is prince. I'm not talking about the guy formerly known as. I'm talking about a prince. A royal son. A royal son. Actual royalty raised from the time you understood to be royalty. To be set apart for a special reason. To lead and to be a leader and to represent the kingdom that you're born into. And that's exactly what the role is best defined as a prince. We need to grasp that significance, all of us. We need to grab a hold of it. Being in the first resurrection is not about getting another 1,000 years of eternal life. It's not about having a little bit more than everybody else. It's about giving everything for everybody else. It's only offered to the firstborn. It's only offered to us. It's an incredibly unique and privileged role to serve God in a close, personal, one-on-one way. You know, this life offers so many opportunities, especially for you young people. So many opportunities to learn and grow and develop so you can grow into the role of a prince. Some of us have a few more years, and there's much we can do. There's many talents that we can still develop, and we shouldn't give up just because of the excuse of years. We shouldn't use that as an excuse. We should continue to grow and develop. This book is available to all of us at any age, and we can get to know this so well that it becomes who we are, not just what we believe, but who we are. Imagine a day when you don't need this because it's who you are. Situations arise, and the words come, the behavior comes, the response comes, the understanding is there because God's Spirit is strong within you and you've become the image of the living God. To the young people, though, seize those opportunities. Apply yourself with this focus of being a prince, a very royal son, a very royal daughter, a princess, or a prince in the royal family of God. Passionately work towards that goal of being royalty, of being a prince or a princess. Do everything with a mind to serving God and glorifying Him. Focus on those positive aspects. Build and develop yourself to become the very members of God's eternal family.